supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Crepe myrtle is a favorite tree down south, and you'd be astonished how many people are growing it in the north. It can do it. It takes a little winter injury when you grow it up here, but they're beautiful plants. And in the question of the week today, we'll tell you how to prune them correctly. But mostly it's a phone call show, cats and kittens, and you know what that means. We're going to take that heaping helping of your telecommunicated questions, comments, tips, tricks, etc. at 1-888-346-9499. Valerie, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you. Hello.
Hello, Valerie. Thank you. How are you?
I am very good.
And where are you very good?
I am in Newtown, Bucks County.
Okay, Newtown, Pennsylvania. I know where that is. What can we do for Valerie in the town of the New?
I have a raspberry bed that is about 12 by 8. And I've had it for, since we moved in, about 10 years. The problem is that I have developed an allergy to yellow jackets.
Oh.
And by the end of the season, the raspberries are completely covered. The yellow jackets are having a feast.
Yes, they are.
And I don't have anybody that can pick for me, so I've decided the only thing to do is to get rid of them.
Okay, I have another idea.
Okay.
Yellow jackets are a form of wasp, a form of hornet. Mm-hmm. Their venom is incredibly powerful.
Mm-hmm.
They like to sting. They can sting you repeatedly. And they are highly aggressive. And you do carry an emergency injector with you in the summertime.
Yes, I do.
Good. Okay. So, here's an interesting situation. Now, you've had these raspberries for 10 years. I'm hoping you have heritage or a similar type of berry that fruits twice.
Yes, they do fruit twice.
Okay. And yellow jackets are only a problem in the late summer fall.
Right.
So,
but then the birds get the first one.
Well, you can set up an automatic sprinkler, a motion-activated sprinkler, to keep the birds away, because you know this first harvest, the harvest that's coming up soon, is bigger than the one at the end of the season. So here's my clever idea. What I want you to do is enjoy the berries that form early in the season. Get as many of them as you can. And then as we get to August, and this year's canes start forming the flowers on the tips, I want you to go out and clip off every flower head. That way, no raspberries will develop, but the canes will survive to produce their second crop the next year. So instead of giving up this fabulous, nutritious fruit, you're just going to eliminate the crop that attracts these pests. You won't get any yellow jacket problems with that first run in the early summer. And as you know, the ones that appear in the fall are very compact and right at the tips of the canes. So they're very easy to go out and prune off. That's like an hour's work.
Yes.
And it won't hurt the cane, and that cane will still produce perhaps even a bigger flush of fruit the next summer.
Oh, well.
What do you think?
Well, I think it's a good idea. I could give it a try and see how I feel, and then maybe next year I'll call you back and say it didn't work, and now what do I do?
Exactly, because then that's a tougher situation. It is very difficult to get raspberries out completely once they've been established like that. And it would be a crying shame. This is like the second most nutritious thing we can grow in the summertime. And you know, the flavor is unparalleled. And I have the same experience as you, as I do sometimes when I'm picking late crops of blueberries. The yellow jackets are very tenacious. And I think they probably know you. You know, now, if it were my wife, I can tell you, you know, if I was the one who was allergic, she'd buy me a beekeeper's outfit. She'd she'd have me out there picking with the hat and the veil and everything.
Mm, mm.
But I think just a simple pruning of the developing flowers towards the end of August will eliminate the problem. And without that soft fruit out there, I think the yellow jackets will begin to be less attracted to your property to begin with.
Okay, but to protect me from the birds who usually get the entire first crop, you say just use one of those sprinklers that are motion activated?
Correct.
Okay.
Because nothing likes getting socked with cold water.
Okay.
And the nice thing about the birds is you can train them to just go elsewhere. They have lots of wild food around.
Yep. Yep, they do.
All right.
Okay, well, I'll certainly give it a whirl.
Yeah, I think it's worth trying.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, you take care.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Gary, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
I am doing very well, Gary. How are you, sir?
Oh, man, the sun is shining. We have blue skies. It is wonderful. I'm in Shreveport, Louisiana.
Well, it's always beautiful in Shreveport, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. We have about 1.5 months of winter, and then it's summer the rest of the time.
What can we do for Gary in the long season of Louisiana?
Mike, I'm a home brewer, and so in the process of brewing beer, I have lots of spent grain that I put along with leaves and kitchen vegetable waste in my homemade rotary composter.
Mm-hmm.
And then until that's ready, I always have a lot of extra, and I put that just in a plastic trash can. And the trash can has now become half full with rainwater. And this is the part I don't know whether is good or bad. The top part is moist, black, sweet, musty-smelling earth, and the bottom part is stinky, raw-smelling soup. I thought that, like when I mash the grain to make beer, where I rinse out the malt sugar from the grain, why not rinse this too, and then I would have something that you might call liquid compost? I just wanted to see.
Or you might not, yeah.
Or I might not, okay.
Okay, so how long have you been composting your brewer's grains?
Let's see, in the rotary composter, it takes about a month.
No, how many years or seasons have you done this?
Oh, probably about 10 or so, something like that.
So you have figured it out. You've figured out the mix that you need to put in there. It sounds like you have a climate that's always going to be favoring the action happening, and you figured out the right combination of browns and greens, and you get good finished compost from it.
Yeah, I kind of play it by ear, and, I'm not measuring exactly or anything like that, but, it works.
Do you get good finished compost from it?
When I have it in the rotary composter, yes. And see, the thing that I talked about with the rainwater, I'll feed that into the rotary, I was just wondering if, with it sitting in that water like that, whether just draining out the water and using that as something would be beneficial. So
this is not a bucket of finished compost?
Not exactly.
This is a bucket of grains alone?
No, it's got leaves in there, and it's got, a kitchen vegetable, stuff in there. And everything that I'd feed into the regular rotary composter.
So this is a it was a bucket of compost to be waiting for its turn.
Yeah, and it got rainwater in it, and then it turned into something different.
Okay. Well, especially where you are, you don't need to be doing this stuff in a rotary composter,
I didn't know that.
You can just set up a big wire bin and mix your ingredients in that, and it'll become compost very quickly.
Oh, okay.
Where you are, tumblers and spinners and those kind of rotary composters make a lot more sense than many climates. Because yours doesn't freeze like mine does in the wintertime. And I tell you, there's nothing worse than cranking the handle and having 20 pounds of wet compost come tumbling down from the top to the bottom.
As
one frozen mass. But that doesn't happen to you. So
you
had your raw ingredients in a bucket waiting, and it got rainwater in it.
Yeah.
And you say the stuff on top looks good and dark.
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
so what I think we should do is we should decant. We should pour that off, and being careful not to get any sediment. And then what I would do is pick an area of your lawn. You have a southern lawn. You have a warm season grass, and it's probably growing already.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So do like Martha Stewart says. You're going to try some in a little out-of-the-way corner and see how it responds. Wait a day or two. If it responds well, or at least it doesn't get little cartoon X's over its eyes, then I think you can use the rest. What I would do with the contents of the bucket is I would mix that up with a lot of shredded leaves and run that through some kind of composter, whether it's your tumbler or a bigger bin. But you need more composters. You sound like you're generating a lot of waste. Sound like you like doing this. I couldn't imagine only having one composter. It'd be like having a car with one wheel.
Yeah. And see, the thing is that, you know, like, okay, the garden is full of compost, and the flower beds are full of compost. Where do I take the rest of it that I make?
What I would do with all your extra compost is I would use it to feed your lawn over the summertime. Lawns love compost.
Okay.
And give some away. I mean, if you got one little lame little composter and you're making more compost than you know what to do with, you know, give it away to other gardeners, man.
Yeah, it's free.
Yeah.
Hey, I appreciate your time.
All right. Well, you take care. You enjoy the beer you make, and you enjoy the compost you make from the part of the stuff that doesn't become your beer.
Sounds good.
All right. You take care, man.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and plant another run of lettuce and spinach out in the garden. I'm still starting the plants indoors to be safe, but it won't be long now before the soil outside is warm enough to sprout the seeds. And then we'll really be off to the salad bowl races. But don't you go singing the Cut and Come Again song just yet, because we'll be right back with lots more of your fabulous phone calls and the correct way to prune a crepe myrtle. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
You Bet Your Garden is made possible with support from Seed Savers Exchange, whose 2011 Heirloom Seed Catalog, offering nearly 600 varieties, is now available. Learn more at seedsavers.org.
You're listening to WHYY. It's 1119.
People's Light and Theater supports WHYY. People's Light presents a new translation of Henrik Ibsen's The Master Builder, now through April 17th. At the height of his career as an architect, Halvar finds his success threatened and his personal life in shambles. The unexpected arrival of the young, attractive, and manipulative Hilda breathes new vitality into his work, but at what price? The Master Builder, at People's Light and Theater. For information, 610-644-3500 or peopleslight.org.
Supporting WHYY, Morris Arboretum celebrates Japanese Cherry Blossom Festival. Two Saturdays, April 2nd and 9th, with Japanese drummers, swordsmanship, a traditional tea ceremony, and more. Details at morrisarboretum.org.
This American Life zeroes in on a tragic local story this week. We'll learn about the family of Benjamin H. Martin and the roles family members and investigators played in solving the murder of Martin's mother, Nancy Martin, a resident of Pittman, New Jersey. This American Life airs tomorrow at noon on WHYY.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, crepe myrtle used to be a favorite flowering tree only in the South, but now lots of people in the North are growing it for those beautiful summer blooms. We'll tell you how and when to prune those crepe myrtles to get the most fabulous flowers this summer when we get to the question of the week. Until then, it's a phone call show, cats and kittens. We're taking that heap and helping at 1-888-346-9499. Steve, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Steve. How are you, sir?
I'm very happy to be alive and breathing on this beautiful day in New York City.
Okay, very good. And when you say New York City, you mean Manhattan?
That is correct. I'm in Lower Manhattan right now.
Okay, very good. What can we do for Steve in Manhattan?
Well, I live in the teeming metropolis of Holmdel, New Jersey.
Okay.
It's actually not a teeming metropolis. It's a small former farming town, and I live in a place with a lot of shade. Just moved there this past year, and there's a couple of pockets of area where there's direct sunlight for part of the day, but nowhere that gets full sunlight all day. And I would like to grow a vegetable garden because the soil is very nice, and I have actually a stream in the backyard, but I don't know what to do. So could you help me out with some ideas about how to grow a vegetable garden with limited amount of sunshine?
What is casting the shade?
Trees, a lot of mature trees, probably about 50 to 100 feet high, mostly deciduous. In fact, almost all deciduous, very few coniferous trees in the backyard.
So you'll be able to make a ton of compost with all the fall leaves?
Without question. In fact, I have not yet made my compost heap, but I'm reading up on that so I can start doing that.
Good, good. Just remember to get something to shred all those leaves. It'll be your most valuable investment.
Okay.
When you say a couple hours of sun, are we talking morning sun or afternoon sun?
Some places are going to get some afternoon sun, like in closer to the front of the yard. Some places get some morning, some places get some afternoon. And I'm thinking of making a few patches of gardening area, depending on what time of day.
Throw me a number. Pick me your best spot of sun. How many hours is my face going to be warm?
I'd say 3 to 4 hours max.
Yeah, you're under.
There's no way I'm going to be able to grow vegetables there.
Well, we got three things going on here. You have lack of sun, and you got bags of trees. So in addition to the sun, you can't grow in ground because that ground is already filled up with tree roots. You realize that?
Right.
Is there an area around the house where you could have a great container garden?
There's a place in the front of the house that is going to get more direct sunlight pretty much all day long. And thing is, there's a lot of kind of decorative landscaping there, which I'd have to adjust. That's not a problem. I could do that.
So that may be your answer. Do you like any of the decorative landscaping?
It's okay, but it's not going to stop my desire to have some nice vegetables growing in the summertime that I can eat.
And do we have a patio or a driveway or decks?
Actually, there is a driveway. There is a driveway, and I didn't even think about that until now. And at the top of the driveway, there's some place that is going to get full sunshine all day.
And is there a garage?
Yes, there is.
But would the plants be in between the street and the garage?
Yes.
Okay. Well, do you think they can be made to coexist, or are you willing to park on the street?
Well, the driveway is huge. I got a lot of room to work with and a lot of ground to work with up there.
Huh. And what's it made of?
So the driveway is solid asphalt.
Okay.
But there is an area between the driveway and the garage and the street that is like a little band of trees, and then there's some lawn that I could basically split the difference between there and put some type of a elevated garden, as you put it.
Right, because I'd want you with all those tree roots, you're going to have to build raised beds anyway. And raised beds are essentially in-ground window boxes. So if you wanted, and if you had the room, you could line your driveway with a long row of raised bed frames.
Mm-hmm.
And then the only thing I would suggest is, if possible, have them be modular, because they're already on a flat surface. It's not like they're going to become one with the surface of the soil. But if there's a way you could move them out of the way over the winter, the only thing I would worry about is if you have a heavy snow, will you be able to see them when you plow your driveway and you use it?
Well, I could just use those little markers so that wherever I'm plowing, I could, and I have a snow thrower, so before the snow comes, I could stick some markers in there just in case I leave them there, so I could make sure I plow around them.
I think that's your best bet. You're going to have to grow in big raised beds anyway because of the tree roots, which sometimes can even infiltrate in situations like this. I worry a little bit if it is full sun about that asphalt getting too hot in the summertime. I might want to urge you to do something as crazy as whitewash it so that it reflects the heat rather than absorbs it. But if you can put a row of raised beds, even down one side of the driveway. You're not going to have any weeds trying to come in. You can build the raised beds as deep as you want. It sounds like the easiest way, rather than trying to manufacture sun that isn't there, and you're going to have to do raised beds anyway, I say put the raised bed boxes where you already have sun, and you have no ground to prepare underneath.
And as for the dirt, or soil, as
you would fill it up. You would fill it up with half compost, half high quality screened topsoil. I'll tell you what. Go to our website. Go to You Bet Your Garden. Click on the link at the top that says Garden Answers A to Z. Go to R for raised beds. That'll hold your hand through the entire project. And I think you'll be able to get this done quicker than a lot of people because you don't have a lawn to remove and you're not going to make the rookie mistake of trying to fight with these tree roots.
Uh-huh. Very good.
All right, man?
Well, thank you for your valuable experience that you've shared with me, and I look forward to updating you later on this year with some delicious fruits.
All I did was walk you around the property, and I showed you where your son was.
All right. Well, that's very good of you to do that instinctively. So keep up the good work and give my love to everyone.
All right, Steve. Thank you.
You too. Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Hillary, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you.
No, thank you, Hillary. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. And where is Hillary good?
In Huntsville, Utah.
Oh, okay. There's an unusual call for us. Very good. What can I do you for?
We have a patch of raspberries, but our dog has decided that they're one of her favorite places to sit.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to move them. And I need to know how and when to transplant them.
And so your climate in Utah has cold winters and hot summers.
Yes. We have about a foot of snow on the ground right now, and we're up in the mountains in Huntsville, so we really don't get started on planting until the end of May.
No, that's fine.
Yeah, and then we're up to, you know, 90s and 100s in the summer.
Right, but you know, people with mild climates year-round can't grow raspberries.
That's too bad for them.
I agree completely. Now, you will note the habit of raspberries is very predictable. In the spring, when your snow melts and the soil warms up, you'll get these little green shoots coming up out of the ground, right?
Yes.
You dig up those little green shoots, you go replant them where you want your new patch to be, and you have moved your raspberries.
Well, that sounds simple enough.
Oh, that's me on a stick. Simple, you know. That's sometimes you get away easy, and in this case, you'll let the old canes peter out in their old location. But this is exactly how I always recommend that people start a new raspberry patch. They go find somebody who's got an established one. They go there in the spring and they rogue out some of the sprouts that come up. Because, you know, you get an enormous number of sprouts coming up in the spring. So you should be able to plant an entire patch, you know, this first spring. So the nice thing here is you are moving the springtime canes really won't interfere with you getting a good harvest off the older canes in the patch. And then those older canes, they're going to be done anyway. So the whole cycle will begin again in your new area.
Oh, super. So then if the older canes are done, do we need to be pulling them out every year or just let them stay in the patch? And
that's a matter of personal preference. When I first started, I really was unsure of myself. And I would look and I'd go, you know, I can't remember if this cane just fruited or if it was just last year. So I let them go. And literally by the end of their second year, they're like firewood. They're like kindling. They're snapping off as soon as you touch them. So they kind of tell you.
Okay. That sounds easy enough. All right. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate your help. We'll look forward to some new raspberries.
All right. Well, thank you. You taught me something. I wasn't sure that you could grow raspberries in Utah, but obviously you can. And as you say, people who can't are sad and unhappy gardeners because there's no easier or tastier fruit to grow.
Yeah. That's right. All right. Thank you.
All right. Have a good season.
You too.
Bye-bye. 1-888-346-9499. Laura, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing okay, Laura. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good.
Good. What and where are you?
I'm from Quakertown, Pennsylvania.
I know Quakertown very well. What can we do for Laura in Quakertown?
I have a bunch of clivias, about 100 of them. And my dad and I have been raising them for about 15 years. And about a year ago, they were attacked by mealybugs. And a lot of the new growth was badly damaged. And I've finally gotten them. There's only like one or two mealybugs every now and then that I'm finally finding, but I don't know how to bring them back to get them healthy again.
What kind of shape are the plants in, and what did you do to the plants to get rid of the mealybugs?
I used an insecticidal soap on them. The bottle said it was organic.
Right.
And basically, I'd wipe down each individual leaf on the front and the back, which took hours.
Right.
And I did it about every 2 weeks. And then when they all seemed to be gone, I didn't do it anymore. And then I had a few times where they came back.
Yeah. It's very tough to eliminate. Now, when the summertime comes, do these plants go outside?
Yes, they do. They go out on my front porch, and we have a shade cover over them.
Okay, because they can't take direct heat?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll tell you a lesson about insecticidal soap. That was not a bad choice. But it doesn't work that way. Insecticidal soap and horticultural oil work in one way only, and that is by smothering the entire body of the target pest. So, for instance, most insecticidal soap will come in a bottle with a sprayer. Your job is to isolate each plant, spray it so that you know you have coated all of the mealybugs. Mm-hmm. Let it sit for an hour. By the end of the hour, all the mealybugs will have been smothered and suffocated. Then you take that plant and you take it to a place where you have like a water sprayer in a sink or something like that. Even better would be pressurized plain water. And you wash it down clean. You want to get the soap off. Even though the soap is beneficial, it can build up on the leaves and cause discoloration. There's a very fine line between insecticidal soap and herbicidal soap, which is why I'm glad at least you bought a commercial product, so it meant it was made the right way. But then, and none of them tell you this. This is something that I had to learn in the business. Then it's very smart to rinse down the plant an hour later. And the next day, repeat that without the soap. Just take the plant to a nice place and really spray it down well now with sharp water. Now you're getting rid of any eggs. Now you're getting rid of any bugs that hid in the soil. And then return the plants to where they are. Keep an eye on them. And I think you'll get the maximum knockdown of the insects with the least amount of harm to the plants. Now, when you put these things out for the summer on this porch, Do insects have access to them?
They do, but we've never really had a problem with insects.
That's not where my head is going here.
Okay.
So, in other words, there are insects that can fly on and or off this porch.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Because I think one thing that people fail to realize is one of the benefits of putting their plants out for the summer. They think of their plants getting infested by pests. I think of the pests being eaten by beneficial insects in the outside environment. I had a famous situation once where I had a pepper plant infested by aphids, and I took it out on one of those February days where it soared up to 75, and I sprayed it off with water and left it sit outside for an hour. And when I came back, it was covered with tiny gnats, and they ate every aphid that was remaining on that plant. It was a cloud of them. And when I brought it in, it was cleaner than I could have ever gotten it. So, you know, when you take them outside, think good thoughts about beneficial insects. They will come and restore the natural order. And then when you do take them outside, I really want you to scrub this area down. I want you to really treat it like a hospital room that had an infection in it, really clean the area well so that it's sanitary. And then when you bring the clivia back in, make sure each one of them goes through an isolation process where you take it to an in-between spot, you spray it with sharp streams of water, and you examine it very carefully before you put them back into their final place. And then, you know, mealybugs are a perennial pest of greenhouses. So daily inspection is everything. If you see a plant that has them again next year, just isolate it and do this right away. And just remember, it is much more important to do soap, wait, and rinse than it is to do soap every 2 weeks. You can rinse the plants down every day, and they will love it, and the mealybugs will hate it.
Yeah, thank you very much.
All right, good luck to you, and I'm sure it looks beautiful indoors there in the wintertime.
Oh, it does. It's wonderful to see all the green.
They'll be back. They'll be fine.
Oh, thank you so much.
All right, you take care.
You too.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and step outside to harvest some pansy flowers to adorn the top of tonight's salads. Cool weather-loving pansies aren't just the finest flower to grow in our currently chilly air. The blooms are deliciously edible and loaded with rutin, the nutrient that helps ease the visible effects of spider and varicose veins. But don't you go saying voila to your violas just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls and how to give a crepe myrtle a proper spring haircut. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
You Bet Your Garden is made possible with support from Seed Savers Exchange, whose 2011 Heirloom Seed Catalog, offering nearly 600 varieties, is now available. Learn more at seedsavers.org.
You're listening to WHYY. It's 11:38.
Mike McGrath, right back at you with local events. If you live in the Lehigh Valley, there's still time to catch my act today at the Green Gardening Workshop and Native Plant Sale at the Lower McCungee Community Center on Brookside Road, where the festivities continue until 2. Next Saturday, April 9th, I'll reveal how to green up your landscape while saving time and money at 1:30 at the Delaware County Environmental Fair at the Strathaven High School in Wallingford, PA. On Sunday, April 17th, I'll appear at the Health and Fitness Fair at the Newtown Athletic Club in Newtown, PA. And on Friday, April 15th, the Delaware Center for Horticulture will lead a wildflower hike into Susquehanna State Park. We'll post all the details at the events section of our website, youbetyourgarden.org.
As any parent knows, a child who's up all night is miserable the next morning. So what does it take to get your kid to sleep? Some answers from child sleep expert Jody Mendel during a live web chat at noon on Tuesday at newsworks.org/health.
Supporting WHYY Backyard Farmers, offering organic products to turn your backyard into a family food producing experience. From vegetable gardens to hen houses to rainwater harvesting systems. More at backyardfarmers.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up in just a little bit, crepe myrtle, that beautiful flowering tree, always popular down south, has migrated quite a bit north, and they do just fine here. When should they be pruned? How should they be pruned? Should we commit crepe murder in the spring? I'll let you know when we get to the question of the week after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. George, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How's it going?
I am doing well today, sir. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks.
And where is George doing great?
I'm calling from Glenside, Pennsylvania.
Very good. What can we do for George and Glenside?
Okay, so last year I decided to put in a vegetable garden.
Right.
And I followed your directions and built a raised bed. It's 4 feet wide and about 25 feet long.
Excellent.
And so my daughter brought home a plant from her second grade class, which was a pumpkin plant.
Oh, the terrorists!
I didn't realize at the time what was involved. But, you know, I always thought it would be cool to grow pumpkins. So,
what do you found out?
And that's why I'm calling. Because we planted it in the end of the raised bed.
But
and
it
I
didn't.
Soon found out that the raised beds aren't exactly the best place to plant these things.
It didn't stay in the end, did it, George?
No, it did not.
It went all over the place.
Yeah, it must have been at least 40 or 50 feet of the yard it covered.
The thing that people don't understand, I mean, they may understand that when you're growing giant pumpkins, you're going to get a giant vine. But what they don't understand is even if you grow the cute little baby bear pumpkins, the little mini pumpkins, the jack-o'-lanterns, you're still going to get a big honking vine. So if that's your question, the answer is no. There are no pumpkins with well-behaved vines.
Actually, I wanted to ask you, how do I set up? Because I have a separate area of my yard that I can use to grow a pumpkin vine, but I don't know how to go about setting it up, the plot. I mean, do I have to rip all the grass out?
No. What I would suggest is you build a mini raised bed, like 2x2.
Okay.
And you're just going to put in one plant, right?
Yeah, just one.
Okay. Build a, like, little mini raised bed, you know, get rid of the grass in there, put down a piece of cardboard on the bottom, fill it up with compost and soil, and then plant your pumpkin in there. And, yes, you will be mowing the lawn as the vine grows. But once the vine covers a section of lawn, I don't think much grass is going to get through, man.
Okay.
And what your biggest job is going to be, in the beginning, directing the vine so that you have an area where you can get to. Because you can put all of the food and all of the water into this little box that the root system is coming out of. But you're not going to be foolish enough to try to contain the vines itself. Those in the beginning, just using pegs or whatever you can, you'll get them to sprawl in a certain direction. And continue to cut the lawn around them, but the pumpkin leaves, as you've seen, are so ginormous that they should shut down the growth of any grass underneath. And quite honestly, man, if you're going to get a lot of pumpkins off this thing, I'd rather have them growing on grass that might be too long than laying on dirt, which would turn to mud.
Oh.
So I think all these things, and you had no problems with mice eating them or with the squash vine borer?
I had some sort of varmint got into one of them.
How did I know that?
Yeah, I think it was a squirrel.
Oh! So. I think the next time pledge drive comes around, we need a squirrel incentive. I think no more the cute, like, flower pot with our logo on it. I think we need a T-shirt that says, "You bet your garden" on the front and "Death to Squirrels" on the back.
I had one small additional question related to this.
Okay.
And, so last year I read a little bit on the website, and it said some people were saying that as these pumpkins start to grow, once you have four or five on the vine, you should cut all the others off.
That's not the worst idea.
I was kind of confused because as I watched these things grow, sometimes, you know, it would appear and then they would die.
Right.
And then another one would appear and then it would die.
That's the natural thinning process that the plant was going through itself. What kind of pumpkins are you going to grow?
Sure, I want to grow the big kind that I can carve.
Okay. You want a good jack-o'-lantern pumpkin.
Yeah, exactly.
If you plant one vine, I would let it grow unmolested in terms of removing any fruits until you get three or four or five good-sized pumpkins and or we reach August. And then after that, I think you should just cut to the chase and pull off any new flowers because that'll direct the energy back towards the fruits that you want to ripen up. But you're also not destroying the growing tip of the plant, so if anything happens to the lower pumpkins, you can then let the flowers continue and you'll get some late-season pumpkins.
Oh, okay. Right.
So certainly when we get to the end of August, all the flowers should be coming off.
Okay.
All right, George?
All right. Sounds great. Thanks.
You're a good dad.
Thanks.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Martin, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello. I got a question about my tomatoes in my garden.
And where is your garden, sir?
I live in northwest Missouri.
Okay, very good. You go ahead.
I got some cattle. I feed them all through the winter, and I take the old hay, and I push it up into a pile with all the manure and everything that's in there. And this pile has been sitting for about 5 years. And I was wondering if that would help to put that on my garden and plow it in or disc it in. And if the cedar trees beside my garden have anything to do with my garden not growing very good.
Oh, yeah. How close are they to your garden?
I'm going to say about 15 feet.
And you have a flat ground garden?
Yes.
And how big is your garden, Martin?
It's about 50 feet wide and 100 foot long.
Okay, so it's not enormous. It's not like the world's biggest truck patch or anything.
No.
All right. Now, what have you been feeding? And I'm guessing that your plants haven't been doing well these past couple of years?
No, I don't put no chemicals or fertilizer, nothing on there. I got good black dirt.
Well,
and I just plow it up every year.
Oh, no. I know that there is this lore about plowing, and people enjoy doing it. But actually, when you plow up soil repeatedly, you actually give the nutrients in your soil back to the air, especially the nitrogen. So repeated plowing tends to cause weed problems, tends to take nutrition out of the soil, and I would not be at all surprised if your garden wasn't doing well if you hadn't fed it. Now, we got another problem with the trees. Would you be willing to try some raised beds this summer?
Well, I've thought of that in the past, but I've never built any of them.
Very simple. They can be as long as you want, as long as each individual set of beds is no wider than 4 feet, because we're not going to walk in there. You're not going to step in there. That's going to stay nice, loose soil, so you'll never need to till it up again. A raised bed's 4 feet wide. Make the lanes 2 feet wide. And now, you have cattle manure that has composted. And am I correct that at least the oldest of your cattle manure has turned into rich black soil-looking substance?
Yes, it has.
Well, I got some good news for you, Martin. Were you a horse man, I would urge you not to use it, because horse manure, even when composted, is overly rich in nitrogen. And your plants would be bigger, but they would not produce as many flowers and fruits as you wanted. Poultry manure is even more extreme. But cattle manure and cow manure is a very evenly balanced fertilizer. It's not overly strong, and it doesn't deliver any nutrient in too strong a fashion. How big a pile you got, man?
Oh, this pile's probably 6-7 feet tall and 40 or 50 feet long.
Oh, baby doll. I want you to build a railroad car. I want you to just buy cheap lumber if you want, or use stones or something. Don't use railroad ties, and don't use treated wood. But make yourself a couple of really long raised beds that are no wider than 4 feet. I want you to mix your composted cattle manure. That's the stuff that's all rich black, doesn't have any smell anymore. I want you to mix that 50-50 with your best soil in these beds. That'll get the tree roots out of the picture. You won't be tilling. Oh, I think you're going to have a summer to die for in a good way.
How high off the ground would a person put them?
I'm thinking 10, 12 inches. It doesn't have to be a lot. And the smart money here, because of all these tree roots, I would layer the bottom, the surface of the soil, with cardboard. And then just build the beds over that. That'll keep any weeds from coming through. So I would think a mixture of your best black loam and 50-50 with this composted cattle manure, fill these boxes, get the tree roots out of the picture. I think you're going to have to, like, find new friends to come over and help you eat all this stuff this summer.
Well, I hope so.
All right, I think we got a plan.
I think we do.
All right.
Thank you.
All right, you have a good summer.
You too. Goodbye.
All right, as promised, it's time for the question of the week, how to prune a crepe myrtle. Joe in Howell, New Jersey, and Percy in Memphis, Tennessee, sent virtually identical emails. When is the best time to prune crepe myrtle, and what are the basic guidelines on how to do it? Ed in Oklahoma City writes, I thought I heard you advise to prune crepe myrtles down to a stub. I have three crepe myrtles, each about 13 feet high. How many feet should I cut them back? And Stephanie in Voorhees, New Jersey writes, I didn't heed your advice to prune my crepe myrtles in the fall. What can I do now to produce flowers for this summer, or must I wait another season? Well, Steph, after more than 20 years in this business, I've come to believe that it must be a common human condition to hear advice in reverse. So many people send me emails or come up to me at speaking gigs and say, I know you told us to get our grass seed down early in the spring, or I know you told us to prune in the fall, but when, of course, I've been saying the exact opposite on both topics for decades. Although many people seem to develop a dire urge to go on a pruning spree in the fall, one, it is never necessary. There is no plant anywhere in this world whose health or blooming is improved by fall pruning. Two, it is often counterproductive. Fall pruning limits or outright destroys the upcoming show on plants that bloom in the spring, like azaleas, lilacs, forsythia, and rhododendron. And three, it is potentially damaging, perhaps even fatal, to any plant, especially in cold climates. Pruning stimulates growth. Pruning a plant that's trying to go dormant for the winter forces it to grow instead, sapping the plant of energy it may desperately need to survive, and creating weak new growth that's extremely prone to winter injury. So, congratulations to everybody out there who, quote, forgot to prune their plants last fall. However, I did say that it was okay to cut crepe myrtle stems down to a, quote, stub on a show that aired many years back. Why? I knew that the plants were summer bloomers, that they flowered on new growth, and that, like butterfly bush, they could survive a hard pruning. Then a legion of extension agents around the country wrote and called to implore me to retract this advice, and instead beg people not to commit what they had come to call crepe murder, explaining that while the practice did seem to fill the need some gardeners have for committing acts of over-the-top operatic horticultural violence, it made for a pretty sad-looking plant after a while, unless you wanted spindly shoots rising out of elephant-sized legs. The time to prune a crepe myrtle is late winter through early spring, with the most sound advice being to wait until the plant begins to put out its first new growth of the season, but not much longer. And while whacking the poor thing back to the ground is no longer advised, some pruning is. Virtually everyone agrees that a little haircut in early spring will induce a crepe myrtle to produce more flowers that summer. So that's the basic answer. A little trim to remove the tips of all the branches is all you'd want to do on a tree or shrub that has a nice pleasing shape and hasn't outgrown its spot. The further north crepe myrtles are grown, the more these southern favorites are also going to suffer a little inevitable winter injury, especially after the kind of slap-you-silly winter many of us just had. So any damaged portions should also be removed in the spring. Now we get to optional pruning, personal choice, and whether or not you bought the crepe myrtle you should have. The original form of the plant, a deciduous tree originally from Asia, grows naturally to 25 or 30 feet tall and develops a very open shape when left unpruned. There are also dwarf varieties that top out at a very tidy 6 to 8 feet, semi-dwarfs that are about twice that tall, and new minis that are said to stay very small and shrub-like without much pruning. Unless you have no choice, i.e., you planted or inherited a standard tree that has dramatically outgrown its space, the best pruning keeps a fairly natural shape to the plant while following the basic rules for woody plants. Completely remove some of the oldest wood by cutting it back down low, remove branches that are crossing or rubbing against each other, and maybe take some out of the center to improve airflow, especially if the plant is in a crowded spot or it's become a tangled mess. Again, The natural habit for most crepe myrtles is to have a fairly shrubby appearance and shape, but some people want to make them look more like their idea of a true tree. In his classic garden manual, The Pruning Book, our old friend Lee Wright describes a multi-year process that involves carefully pruning out the smaller secondary branches to gradually reveal a single trunk that achieves this goal. Whatever you choose to do, always try and follow the one-third rule. Don't remove more than one-third of the growth in any season. If you want to dramatically reshape a crepe, do it over the course of several seasons. Oh, and don't be a crepe murderer. And if you do, please don't tell people I told you to. Well, that sure was some timely advice on crepe myrtle cleanup now, wasn't it? Luckily, yous can read the print version of this in every question of the week at the Gardens Alive website. Just click the link at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Yikes, my producer is threatening to crepe murder me if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, you're tired, you're poor, you're wretched, refuse teeming towards our garden shore, at garden@whyy.org. Please tell us where you live. We have so many homeless listeners. Put the actual subject in the subject line. Everybody wants help, boys and girls. And check first to see if the information you seek is already waiting for you at our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you can click through to the question of the week. Find the answer to hundreds of garden problems, hint, hint, just like yours, hint, hint, in our alphabetized archive of garden answers, and or listen to this show, listen to old shows, and or download this week's podcast. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week is Kevin, the Love Train Griffin. Our webmasters are Rich, master of the Savage Server Banowitz, and Sarah, the She-Devil Kazar. Our intern, Jessica Mandick, is recovering nicely from her own winter pruning. Already perfectly pruned is Alexis Landis, who produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Still waiting for his annual haircut is our esteemed editor, Al Banks. I guess you can dig a little off the sides because there ain't nothing left up top, Mike McGrath. And I'll see you next week. The time to apply mulch to your bare earth is fast approaching. I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll discuss the wisdom of keeping weeds down with peanut hulls and other locally available resources. Plus your fabulous phone calls.
Maple trees, mint, mulberry, Mike with his mannered and mirthful demeanor helps us to mold marvelous gardens. So join us Saturday mornings at 11.